Chodesh Tov Mivorach, all. So here we are today on this wonderful Rosh Chodesh Elul, the first of Elul. And we are holding today on Daf Nun Gimel, just like the original Gan Eden. And we are still on Nun Beis Amud Beis, and we're on the third line from the bottom. So we got up to Rav Papa, Yasikle Livrei, Be Abba Surah. Rav Papa was trying to arrange a marriage between his son and the daughter of Abba Surah, who happened, by the way, as you remember before, he was married to Bat Abba Surah. Remember, she was the one that told him what it feels like to break betulim, that it's not so bad, it's just like a piece of dry bread against your gums, whatever. So the idea is that obviously there were other wives and there were children that were unrelated to his own son and were not the aunt, which he would be usher to marry. So he was trying to basically marry her off to his sister-in-law. So, okay, this meant that he came over. They were trying to arrange for the ketubah and how much we were going to put into the ketubah. These are always very sensitive kind of arrangements. So anyway, so Yehuda Bar Marima heard about it, and he was going together with Rapopa to go with him and to, you know, be malavim. They get up to the door, Ata and Ischazile, but Kimatu Lepitcha Avikamiftam. And when they got up to the door, so Yehuda Bar Marima said, okay, you know, go in. I hope everything works out. See you later, alligator. And Rav Papa was like sort of upset. I mean, like, you know, he figured he would have a little moral support over here. You know, maybe Ritzel Rebuta would come in with him, you know. So he said, why don't you come in? Neomar Ba'adei, why don't you come in with me? So Chazidu Avi Nechalai, Rav Papa saw that he really didn't want to go in. So he said to him, why are you so reluctant to go in? I mean, it seems you hold that I'm doing the wrong thing. Is it Mishum de Armalei Shmuel Rav Yehuda Shinana Lotavi Baburiach Santa Filmi Brabishal Bratava? So is it because since Shmuel told Rav Yehuda, don't get involved in any kind of case where you're going to end up turning the Yerusha away from the boys in the family, and even in a case where you're going to take the Yerusha away in some fashion, you know, by giving a gift and whatever it is that you're going to do, and one son is a no-goodnik and you want to cancel his part in the father's will, and you want to give it to, like, this really good son that he's got, big Talmud Chacham, even that, don't do that. Don't get involved in issues of inheritance to take them away from who they belong to. You don't know. Remember, inheritance is a long time project. And it's just as dangerous as getting involved with deciding where the money is going to go as deciding where the genes are going to go. You want to sit there and start selecting the genes of the children? God only knows what the ultimate impact is going to be in the next 20 generations. So the same thing is true of the money. You're saying, wow, I don't want it to go into the hands of this rotten son. But that rotten son may end up fathering like the most important son in history. I don't know. What do you know? So because of that, it's dangerous to get involved in such things. So maybe you feel that that's exact. You don't know what kind of future generations may be coming from what you think is a useless kid. And kol shekein sifu kol shekein mibro labarta. So you don't want to take away the Seder of the Yerusha. You feel that I'm doing the wrong thing. I'm going to go in here and I'm going to persuade my father-in-law to give money that was really meant to be inherited by his sons. And now he's going to invest it in his daughter's future. That's going to be taken, essentially, it's going to be taken out of the money that would have gone to the sons. So you're reluctant to come in. But don't you remember that this is also Hainami Takanta Derabonani? This is not like we're doing something wrong. Derabonan were metakein this based on the remez in the pasuk. You know, the pasuk said, take husbands for your daughters, and we were medayik that meant that you're supposed to invest in their future to make it more likely that they'll get a good marriage. So why are you reluctant to come in? The Omer Rabbi Yochanan, Mishum Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Remember the pasuk we were just talking about yesterday. Omar Lay, so Bermuda told him, Hani Milami Daite, if the father wants to give, that's fine. But what, you want to, like, force him to give? La Suye Nami? Sri Prabhupada said, what are you talking about? Force him. Did I ever say anything? I never said to put any pressure on them. I just want you to sit there for moral support. Did I say come in and put pressure on him? I said, just come in and be there with me, nu. Or my laser, if you'd have told him, let me tell you something. If I walk in, that's already pressure. It's the same as if I was forcing him in court. Anyway, Rav Papa kept pushing him and pushing him. Achpe, remember we've seen before that Achpe could be used in the sense of keep up the verbal pressure until he gives in. Okay, so Achpe means you force him. I can't take it anymore. Fine, all right, I'll go in. So he went in, but he said, I'm keeping my mouth shut. I'm not going to say a word. I don't want him to think that I'm in favor of this. So he goes in and he's quiet. And he's just sitting there. Ishtik V'yosef. So now, poor Abba Sura was convinced that Rav Yehuda is sitting there, not saying a word, because he's angry, he's fuming. This is what a rich guy gives his daughter? What? You're only giving 100,000? So he puts it up, 150,000. He's still looking miserable. Okay, 200,000. Rav Yehuda is sitting there. All right, he finally gives every last penny that he owns. He gives to his daughter. So he just keeps upping. So Savar, who mirtach ratach, is angry. In the end, he gives everything. And he sees Rav Yehuda still not saying anything. So he finally says, Ashta nami lo mishtai mar. But now you're also still angry. You're not going to talk to me. I didn't leave myself a single penny. Like, I don't have any more money. Oh, my life, Rav Yehuda says to him, you didn't ask me. If you would have asked me, I would have said, don't give her a solitary cent. Even what you started with, I was upset about. I don't want you to give more. I want you to give less. So, okay. So he said, all right. So then it was all misunderstanding. I take it all back, right? I mean, I take it back, can't I? I never said that you should turn yourself into an Indian giver. I mean, Shavin Avshka Hadrana Lo Kamina, because for sure we're not allowed to say those words. Indian giver, you understand, you get put into jail for that nowadays. But I'm just going back to Girsa de Ankusa, you know, when I was a kid, that's what they used to say. We don't really mean anything. We don't even mean a Cleveland Indian giver, because they have to change their name also. Okay, so what a world. Anyway, so that I didn't say, so no, I don't think it would be right to change your mind, you know. Rav Papa sure knew what he was doing, huh? He got himself a heck of a marriage for his son. Anyway, boy mine Rav Yemer Sava mi Rav Nachman. So now, in order to polish up our understanding of the factors that are taken into consideration in this ketuvah benin dichrin, so remember that we started off with all kinds of questions yesterday about whether benin dichrin ought to be a function of the particular case, and whether the father did give, or whether he was taking money away from daughters or from sons, and so on and so forth. We ended up essentially coming out that there's a standard, a typical benin dichrin. We don't change it according to circumstances. Fine. But now we'd like to zero in on the psychological factors that are involved in benin dichrin, and what the relationship is, not of the father who gives the money, but rather of the mother of these children, who was Zocha when she got married, to the promise from her husband that in the event that that property ends up being given as part of the Yerusha, so then her children are going to be the ones that inherit it. So now we've got basically a situation where the husband would have inherited her benin dichrin, meaning all of the things that she had brought into the marriage. And then when he dies, all of those things are not split between all his children. They are sequestered into an account for the children that he had with her. But the question is, there are things that she can do in her relationship with her husband that might affect the relationship to the ketuvah benin dichrin. Because, I mean, for instance, what she could do is actually sell the rights to her ksuva to her own husband. So in other words, if she wants money for something or another, and she doesn't have enough money to do whatever project she wanted to do, so what she does is she sells her rights to her husband. And over here, if she sells those rights, it's a good sale. I mean, it's not going to be a very good idea, because it would mean that essentially he is continuing a marriage without a ksuva. So he's going to have to move out of the house. But so obviously what we're talking about over here is where before he wrote her a new ksuva, when they told him, listen, buddy, it's not going to help, he basically died right away, you know, or he didn't care. I mean, obviously it's possible he didn't care and he just did an iser. But the bottom line is that she sold it. So now the question is, when she sells the ksuva, does she also sell the rights to the benin dichrin? So yesh la ktuvat benin dichrin o ein la ktuvat benin dichrin? Because basically, if she sells, then that means that he gets all the rights, and therefore, let's say that the husband would have died, or let's say that he gave her a get. So over there, what she's saying is, well, I'm not going to take anything from the estate. I'm not going to take a ksuva of 100 or 200, depending on what the situation was. I'm not going to take mizonos and so on. And if I die first, then you've bought off the rights that you're not mechuyev to keep any of the issues that are in the ksuva. So now what about the ksuva, the benin dichrin? Maybe, even though she sells her rights, but she has no ability to sell the rights that were given by Chazal to her children, because those were really given in order for the father to invest, and that means that it's not really up to her. So that part isn't sold. Or, I mean, we could say that, listen, if she sells the ksuva, there's basically nothing in there that she can retain power over, because the ksuva contained the nichsei malug, and it contained all of the nichasim that came in with an estimation, all of that which was part of her dowry, all of that she was supposed to collect if her husband dies or divorces her, and now she's mochel at that. So if that's the case, if it turns out that she dies, right, and then he ends up inheriting her when he dies. There was nothing left of the rights that she had in the ksuva. Maybe. So it's not clear what the din would be of the benin dichrin. In other words, does it relate directly to the father who gave the money? Or is it really part of the way that a woman relates to her ksuva and sees it in her benefit? Again, remember that there's always two elements that we need to take into consideration in any takana rabbana: the end that we're trying to achieve and the reason that we're trying to achieve it. So, I mean, you could say certainly the end that we're trying to achieve is something that is reflected in her ketuvah, but that is how it is that we're going to go. I'm sorry. I mean, the way in which we're going to go about it is by giving her a ketuvah. But what it is we're trying to achieve by it is that a father should give money. So, I mean, the question is, what are we looking at over here? Does she retain the rights to affect the mechanism? Because in that way, even though she's taking away his money and the rights that we gave him, but the way that we gave those rights was through her ksuva. So then maybe she still retains the rights. This is a profound question of how exactly we balance out these questions. Omar Le Rava. Well, I mean, this is a rare situation for a woman to sell her ksuva. You should have asked something that actually happens more naturally, in which the woman says that she's mochelet her ksuva. Her husband's having difficult times and he wants to sell a field, and she's mochelet the shibud of her ksuva and so on. So why didn't you ask that? So apparently it's clear to you that in the event that she doesn't get anything out of it, so she doesn't get any money for it towards her projects, whatever her pet projects were, so that in this case, she's certainly not going to be mochelet the ksuvas benin dichrin. That's what you seem to hold. I mean, that's such a minor issue. Why would that be something that would make the difference? or Marlene. Now, you don't understand. I'm Bedavka asking this case because Ashta, I have a question even Benogia, a Mocheret, Kami Boeli. I'm asking specifically the fact that she got money for it, even in that case where you would say, okay, fine, so if that's the case, she got money. But that proves the fact that she got the money is a reason to say that she should actually keep the rights, because it means that she was not relating to the ksuva as something that is meaningless to her. On the contrary, she desperately needs cash, and she's so desperate that she's willing to sell her ksuva. If she's stam mocheret the ksuva, so over there I would say, if a mocheret afagav ikal meima zuzi anasua, you could say she was desperate, and therefore she certainly only wanted to give as little as she possibly could. And I say that in that case, it's the same as amina kamadik mamochu lomea uchli beuchla. That even there I was considering it would be like a case where somebody brings a whip that's got a little weight at the end, a little metal weight, and that's a pretty painful whip. So it's like we've been beating her, okay, fine, you can have the ksuva. That's basically what happened, and she was so desperate for money. And nonetheless, I'm saying, okay, but the sale might by definition include benin dichrin. So koshikena mochelet, where she just doesn't seem to give a hang about it, and therefore the whole thing ought to be that she's not really interested in maintaining her rights. Omar Rava, well, let's start by thinking about a related case. Let's start by thinking about a case where she sells the ksuva to somebody else. Now, over there, there's no problem with the husband maintaining her. How do you sell a ksuva to somebody else? You say, look, in the event that I die, you get nothing. But in the event that my husband predeceases me, or he gives me a get, so then all of the things that I am going to be getting out of that, they will accrue to you, and you're going to pay me in advance. So, okay, whatever. I mean, it'll be, obviously, it's not going to be the full price of the ksuva. It's whatever the actuarial issues are. Maybe he'll give her, you know, 30 cents to the dollar for a ksuva, whatever. And then remember that that ksuva would include all of the things that were going to come back to her. So now the question in that case, I would say it's obvious to me that the benin dichrin still applies, meaning that if in the end it turns out that her husband did not die first and that she died first, which means that the baal was yoresh everything, that ultimately when that baal dies, then her children are going to inherit all of that as the standard benin dichrin. That's Pashit. Why? Because in the end, what she sold ended up was a gamble, and he didn't get anything. The guy gave the money, and he was hoping that the husband would die and that he would collect. In the end, she died first, so he lost his gamble. Fine. So in that case, since Lamaisa, even in the event that there was never any Mechira, nothing would have been any different because the Mechira does not affect the case where she dies first. So there in that case, why should I think about what the Mechira accomplished? It didn't accomplish a darn thing. And therefore, there's the standard Benin Dichrin, for sure. And what are you going to say? That she doesn't seem to care? Of course she cares. It's just that she needed the money. So Zuzi Anasu, okay. Furthermore, it's also clear to me, says Rava, that if she stam mochelet the ktuva to her husband, so then she doesn't seem to care. So she's mochelet. So then there are no ktuva benedichri, because she was telling her husband, listen, all the debts you have to me, don't worry about it. You don't owe me anything in the event that you divorce me. Okay, so then that means that included the property that had been brought in, was supposed to be given to her, and so on. She was mochelet all of that as well. So it's clear to me she doesn't really care all that much. And that would have meant that if the husband had divorced her, or if he had died, that her children would have ended up never getting any kind of money out of it. So apparently she's a chuli achilte. So why should they retain the benin dichrin in the event that she dies first and then he dies, leaving the property to them? Now that makes all the sense in the world to me. My question would be, in the event that she sells her ksuva to her own husband, so it's not the pshat, what she says to him, she says to him that if he pays her now, so then whatever, again, actuarially, whatever it would be, maybe 30 cents to the dollar, that if he ends up divorcing her, if he dies first, she's not going to get the ksuva. So my question is that the same situation as where she was mocheret la'acherim? Because I said when she sells it to somebody else, in the event that there would still be a benin d'achrim because she dies first, so it really didn't make any difference to sale, that's true about a husband true also. If she dies first, it doesn't make any difference to the sale. So then I would say that if that's the case, there would be benin d'achrim. It's exactly the same as she had sold it to a third party, right? But it's not really exactly the same. Because basically, if we're talking about a husband, then what you're ending up doing is saying that there's no ksuva, because one way or the other. And if I'm going to die, so then there's no ksuva. And if you're going to die, there's no ksuva, because I just sold my rights to take the ksuva from you, in which case, she's indicating that she has no interest in the whole thing. I don't give a hang about this business of ksuva. Okay, so if you don't give a hang about the ksuva, so then you don't give a hang about benin d'achrin either. So that's my question. Do we treat it the way we would normally treat a sale, or do we treat it as a mechila, because that's what it boils down to? Basically, is that she's living in a way that the ksuva makes absolutely no difference to her, no matter who dies first. Basadi, boyin. Hodar Pashta. Afterwards, he made his own determination, Rava, and he said, Mocheret kituvah leba'ala is no different than a mocheret to a third party. I believe that that's more reasonable. Okay, there's a lot of discussion where he gets this from, because it's a similar sugya that he may be relying on, according to some of the Mefarshim. We have a similar sugya in Bava Kama. Well, we get there, Bezrat Hashem. We'll point out the connection that it has to our sugya. Mosif Ravidi Baravin. So now Ravidi Baravin has a Mishnah that seems to say that Rava is wrong. And that is the Mishnah, remember, about the case where a woman got married on the basis of one witness who said that her husband had died. She goes and she marries another guy, and then her husband walks in. So what is the halacha in that case? That if she had children from both of those husbands, neither of them collect benin d'achrin. Remember, that was part of the mipnei chomer shichmarta leh b'sofa. So because of that, he kalta leh b'tchilata. Because we want to make sure that she does a tremendous amount of research before she would go ahead and get married to somebody else. And based on that research, we're going to rely on the eid echad that was matter her, right? So it says over there in the Mishnah that if she dies, neither of the children from either husband, Ein Yorshin Shel Zeh, Ve'Ein Yorshin Shel Zeh, Yorshin Ketuvata, neither of them are going to inherit a ketuva. And we said, what ketuva? The first thing that we said was, is that she doesn't have a ketuva because she went and married another guy. So she lost both ketuvas. That was like the first thing. So what do you mean? Her children don't inherit a ketuva. There isn't any ketuva. Ketuva. Maya Vidita, how did a ksuva get involved over here? And Rav Papa explained over there that obviously what it means is the ktuvat benin d'chrin. Neither children from either marriage, even the mamzerim from the second marriage we're talking about, and the real children from the first marriage, which is the real marriage, neither of them collect benin d'chrin. Why? I mean, certainly there is just as much, to say the least, pressure on her to get herself a husband, as there is in a case where she's forced to sell a ksuva because she's got a pet project of opening up a center for senior women. I mean, I don't understand. You understand the psychological constraints a woman is going to be faced with living her whole life without a husband. She's got one witness. I mean, certainly the same getter of onus, right? And you were ready to say that, well, she's not going to lose her ksuvas benin d'chrin because, after all, the zuze antsua, she was under a lot of pressure to make money. And she's not under pressure to have a husband. We say the same thing. Come on. There's no comparison at all. The whole point over there in Yavamis of that sugya was that we went out of our way to make life miserable for her, remember? Because we wanted to create a situation that was so untenable that she would not take the chance, although she was absolutely positive, she would not take the chance of marrying the second guy. It wasn't because she was like, Mochela Tuxuva, Mochera Tuxuva. It was part of our search for ways to make her miserable. So one way to make her miserable was to recognize that there's not going to be anything left of the rights, even of an indichrin from the ktuvot that we canceled. But that has nothing to do with the question about whether she's considered to be the equivalent of mochelet because she didn't care enough and she wanted the money and all that. That's not the issue. So hatam kanatsu the kansur rabbanan, we wanted to make her do a lot of investigation before she got married. It's an unrelated sugya. Now, Rav Bar Chanina was sitting in front of Rav Chisda, and he was saying over the name of Rabbi Elazar that a mochelet ketuvata leba'ala ein la mizonot. Once she was mochelet, then she was also mochelet the tnai in the ketuvah that says that you are going to be taken care of so long as you continue to live on the estate. Because since she basically is mochelet all of her rights, she also, all of the tna'im of the ketuvah are considered to be the same as the ketuvah. She's not, we're not talking about over here the rights that she has while she's married. That's not from the ketuvah. That's even a d'oraisa, right? But over here, we're talking about after the husband's death. That is part of the rights of the ketuvah. And she was mochelet. So that's something else. Omar Le, man, I can tell you, it's a good thing that you quoted Rebbe Elazar, because if you hadn't, I would have really gone after you and said it's ridiculous. He loved the Kamer Mishmei the Gavra Rabba. If you hadn't quoted Rebbe Elazar, a great man, I'd have set you. That doesn't make any sense. You know, there's a beautiful pasuk in Mishle, which is Meshiv Ra'a Tacha Tova Lo Tamush Ra'a Mi Beto. A very encouraging pasuk, actually. That somebody who pays back good with evil, evil will never leave his home. So, fine. So if that's the case, how can you do such a thing? I don't understand. She does him a favor so that he doesn't have to worry and he can sell this field that he needs because he needs to be able to get money, whatever, right? So she's mochelet ksuva. So no good deed goes unpunished. Oh, you're a mochelet ksuva. Now you can starve to death. We're not going to give you any kind of money for your support. It's disgusting. Yosef Reb Nachman v'ula v'avimi be'rav papi. So now, I'm sorry, v'avimi bar rav papi. V'yosef Reb Chia bar ami gabayu. So Reb Nachman ula and avimi bar papi. They were sitting there and Reb Chia bar ami was with them. And atau hu gava d'shchiva arusato. So somebody comes in with a shayla, in which his arusa had died, and he wanted to know whether he was mechuyev to take care of the funeral. And she was only an arusa. So, okay, we said before that an arusa may have a ksuva, but there's no ksiva of the ksuva until immediately before the nisuin. Which means that the question was, do the tna'ei ktuva go into effect just because we have a ksuva that's a chiev? Omrulaysa, they told him, look, either pay your ksuva or pay for the funeral. So zil kvar o havla ketuvata. Because remember that the way that we did the trade-off, everything is a quid pro quo. Remember, so the trade-off for the chiev of kvura is because since he's going to inherit her ksuva, it only makes sense that he should actually bury her. I mean, she died and he gets benefit from her death. So then he should pay for the funeral. Now, the Gemara here was making a mistake because the Gemara was thinking that what we're talking about over here is the ksuva of mana or matai, meaning that since he saved the payout of the ketuvah because she did him the favor of dying before him, so because of that, he should at least pay for a funeral, right? Which is really not the case, we're going to see. Okay, So we're assuming here, like with all of the sugyas that we had up until now, that we're going with the shita that the Arusa has a ksuva, or that he wrote her a ksuva. Anyway, so that's what they said. Amalohu Rabbi Chiyas. Rabbi Chiyas said to him, this is a complete misunderstanding of the facts, because Tanina, it says beferish in the Braita as follows, that Ishto Arusa does not have any claims for a funeral on her Orus. So it says over here, if a man's Arusa dies, there's no din of aninus on him, he's not metame to her funeral if he's a kohen, v'chein hi lo onenet, if he dies, she doesn't have any din of onenut or avelus, v'lo metame lo, she's not mechuyev over here, obviously, there's no isra on her to be metame, meta, Eno Yosha, if she dies, he does not inherit her, and Meithu Govak Tuvata. If he dies, then she does collect the Ktuva. But what it means when it says he doesn't collect, it means he doesn't collect. We saw earlier, he doesn't collect the money that the father had set aside to give her as the investment into her marriage. Now, here's my point, says Rav Chiya. It says over here that the reason that the Arusa gets the Ksuva is because he died. But Hameta he, then she wouldn't have gotten the Chiev in the Ksuva to a Kfura. So then if that's the case, what we're talking about over here is not that we're going to give the Chiev of the husband to bury her in exchange for the fact that she did him the favor of dying because he saved the 100 or the 200 of the Ksuva. No, that's not the point. It means that it was given to the husband as the quid pro quo for the Yerusha of the money. And that we said before, remember, that he was not chayev in that money until there's actually a writing up of the ksuva. So therefore, there's no chayev on him to bury her at all. And you guys are claiming he's got to either pay out a ksuva of 100 or 200. That was not what was in exchange for the burial. So, my taima, what reason is there actually? Why don't we say that he should? It is a good quid pro quo. I mean, after all, she did do him the favor of dying, which saved him $200. So then he should ought to give the $200 towards her funeral, right? No, the reason is because read the clause, okay? Again, we've been doing this all along. The words of the ksuva are very definitive. What it is that he wrote to her is, L'kishati nas'i le'acher titli ma shekotuv l'chi, that in the event that you are not living in my home any longer and you go and marry somebody else, then you are able to collect your ketuvah. Now, it's going to be very hard for her to go marry somebody else if she's dead. And therefore, this is not a clause that applies to her. And that means that the entire idea, the way that we write it, is that it only is chal after she's able to get married, which means that he died or he divorced her. But in the event that she died first, then there's nothing, he's not getting anything from her, meaning there's no Yerusha of Riksiva, and she therefore does not have any chiyuvim on him. Ki yosu ravin omer Reish Lakish, Arusa shemeta ein la ketuvah, which means apparently the same thing that we just said. So Ravin thinks he's bringing big news. And he's saying, look, Reish Lakish says he doesn't have any chiyuv on him to be kover because she doesn't have any exchange of what it is that the kvura was for, which was the money that was being brought in, and that isn't chal yet. So he was like feeling really good about this, and he figured everybody's going to give him a l'chaim. And even if Bobby's falling asleep, it would still give him Elchaim. Bobby, your head is bobbing. So now, welcome home. So now Ravin was waiting for a Elchaim. So Abaya told the Talmud, oh, this is great news, right? He said, go tell Ravin, you know, you can take your great big news, wrap it up with a ribbon, and then throw it out onto the thorns outside. We don't need it. We don't need your shkila tuvate, shadiach izrek, and throw it out on the thorn bushes. We think we didn't figure this all out ourselves. Kfar Tirgamer of Hoshaya, Leshmaite Babavel. We just explained how it is that we worked all this out on our own. We don't need Big Brother teaching us all the time over here. Okay, next tonight that we have in the Ketuvah is the Tanaya Benan Nukban. So what does it say? Benan Nukban, the Avin Lechiminoi, any women, female rather, I should say, they, if they are from me and I die, they're going to be living off of my estate until until the point where they're actually going to be married. So Rav read the Mishnah with those words, Aj detilakhan lejuvrin. But Levi had a girsa where he would say over the Mishnah, Ad detibagran, until the time that you actually become a bogeret. Now, neither of this makes much sense. According to Rav, I mean, certainly Rav doesn't mean to say that if they're already bagrut, they reach bagrut, that the father's estate continues to support them. I mean, that at that time, they're out of the wishes of the father. No. So Rav can't mean that. And Levi can't mean that even though she's already married to somebody else, because in either case, she's no longer in the wishes of the Av. So why in the world would the estate of the Av be chayev? It takes her out of the wishes of the Av. Even if he were alive, there wouldn't be anything that he has to do with them. So why in the world would his estate have to do with them? Ella, so what it's got to mean is like this, that if she became a bogeret, so then even if she never got married, or if she got married and she never became the bogeret, everybody would agree, obviously, that at that point, she's not mishus to the father, there's no more support coming from the estate. But what they do argue about is an arusa. How do we understand the state of arusa vis-a-vis the father's support? So Rav is saying that if she already reached the arusa, that's what he's saying, that then she's no longer going to get support. And Levi says, no, it's until bagrut, or the equivalent of bagrut, which is nisuin, which takes her out of the rishus of the father. So that's basically the machlokes. Rav is ready to accept achetilakhun mejuvrin means until kicha, right? Shetilakach, but kicha kikach ishisha is kedushin. That's an arusa. Doesn't mean he has to take her to the chuppah. And that's goofa what the machlokes is. And Lamaisa Levi taught in his own brisa. Remember, this is a very interesting place where Rashi brings that whenever we say Tani Levi, it's because Levi went through the entire Shas and he compiled brises the same way that Rabbi Chiya and Rabbi Voshia compiled brises, which we call the Tosefta. So there's an equivalent to the Tosefta, which is the Tani Levi, which is often very different than the way that Rabbi Chiya and Rabbi Voshia did it. And this, in his own brisa, Levi wrote, that's what it says, Chen Tani Levi b'matnite, in his own brisa that he had written, he said it like this. Ad de tibadran, v'yamti zmanehon de inasvan. The only time that Levi says that you end the support from the estate is where the 12 months ran out, and that means that now the Orus is going to start providing for her. So in other words, Levi holds that the only time that you don't have to provide for her from the estate if she's still a child is if she already is getting support from a husband, either because he literally took her to the chuppah, or because the 12 months where he promised that he was going to take her, or where she was supposed to be ready for getting married, and that doesn't happen. At that point, she gets support. And therefore, we see that indeed the idea is, according to Levi, it's only nisuin or the equivalent of nisuin, not erisin. But what do you mean? To bagrin, both? At the bagrin plus it's time for marriage? Tarte? Both things? No, of course not. I mean, what it's saying over here is, oh, to bagrin. Oh, yamtis maneon leinastava. So either way, there would be support. What's the machlokas over here between Rav and Levi? It's the same as a machlokas that we have tanoim, because there's a brayta that says like this, ad matai abat nizonid, how long does she get support from the estate, this daughter? Ad shetayares. Ooh. Now that says Beferish, like Rav, only until Erison. Mishum Rabbi Elazar amru ad shetibager. Ah, which says exactly like Levi. So here we have a machlokas of Tanakama and Rabbi Elazar, which is the machlokas of Rav and the Levi Shita. Tani Rav Yosef said the Lashon HaBraisa ad deyehevyan, until Havaya. There are two states of Havaya. Do you mean Iboilu, Havaya de Erusin, or Havaya de Nisuin? Well, the Braita left that up in the air, didn't it, in order to allow this conversation. Amalei Rav Chista, the Rav Yosef, did you maybe hear from Rav Yehuda, where you learned by, whether the Arusa gets Mizonot, or once she's an Arusa, she ends up without it? In other words, do we paskin like Rav or like Levi? So how do we go la halacha? Omar Le, listen, I have to admit that I never heard it directly from him, what his shita was in this case. Mishma lo shmiali, but I mean, I would tell you my own opinion on the matter, mitzad asvara. I would say mitzad asvara, she should not get any more support. Why? Poor Barnea. Look at this. His arm is about to fall off. Ay, ay, ay. I will give you a hand. I would say that, look, once the husband took the kinyan of Erisin, so why did we want the whole idea of her being supported by an estate, right? We said because we understand that we don't want to put a girl into a position where she's going to be banging on doors or sitting at street corners like homeless people begging for support, because that's a ziluta. So we made this takana in terms of ziluta and understanding that that surely would be the das of anyone, that he would not want her to be zilusa. But in this case, she's got herself a chosan, right? So even though he's not responsible for giving her money to live when he's just an orus, but nonetheless, he's certainly not wanting to see his beautiful new kala going around banging on doors asking for support. So therefore, the estate could say, okay, she's got somebody else to worry about her now. Let him go ahead and make sure she's not embarrassed, so we don't have to give support. So Rav Chisda said to Rav Yosef, if you don't tell me your opinion, okay? If you never, I asked you if you heard from Rav Yehuda. I didn't ask you for your crummy opinion. Because, I mean, if you did not hear what the halacha is, then you could, I would think it's exactly the opposite of what you said. Misvara, I would say she does get support. Because what are we going to do? We're going to rely on the Orus to give her support? He's not going to support her. Because now this is very interesting, again, because psychologically, even though we don't have that state of Erisin anymore, in a technical sense, but we do have a state of Erisin in a psychological sense. And that's what we even refer to it as Erisin, even though it isn't, and it's very misleading. So we call a girl who's engaged, right? She's mu'uresit. So it's not really mu'uresit. But it serves much of the same purpose, because what it does is it allows an entire period in which you can change your mind. And that's very important. Because the development of that relationship, at the time that you have before the marriage, where things get more intent and all of the things you never suspected about your prospective mate suddenly show themselves, and you just, get out of here, man, I'm out of this one, right? So then that means that the Orus, the reason that he's got this 12 months over here is because he's not ready really to commit. What do you mean? I'm supposed to decide, boom, we're married? What are you, crazy? So I'm taking my time, right? Okay, so then why would I put in money? I don't even know if I'm going to marry her. I mean, I got engaged. Well, you think that means I'm ready to jump into the chuppah? It's not supposed to actually pay money for her support. He's not going to pay money for her support because given the lokim lebegavalo shadi zuzi bichti, I'm not going to throw my money out for nothing. I don't really know that I'm going to end up taking her to the chuppah, for heaven's sakes, because who knows what I'm going to find out about her. So if she has some kind of mum that's going to prevent the wedding, obviously there's all kinds of mumim, that would break a marriage. The ikariyami. Now, some say that what Rabbi Yosef said to Rabbi Chista was not what we said, but rather, mishma lo shmili. Actually, I didn't hear anything from Rabbi Yehuda. This is the same thing, but backwards. According to this version, what Rabbi Chista said to Rabbi Yosef is what Rabbi Yosef said to Rabbi Chista. That I didn't hear, but I would say mitzad hasfora, we have to continue supporting her, because why would the Oris support her? He's not going to throw his money out. And in this version, Rav Chista said to Rav Yosef the opposite. I didn't ask you for your opinion. If you didn't hear directly, then I would have said the exact opposite. I would have said that Misfara Leitla, she doesn't get everything, because look, I mean, she's got herself an Arusa, right? And he's not going to be very happy with seeing his new Kala running around banging on doors. So this is basically the same thing, but in the exact opposite way. Now, we have a number of one after the other issues where we want to know at what point the din of the support kicks in or is lost. And these, each one of these questions is a deeper insight into the mechanisms and purpose of providing the din of support from an estate. So since we're going to have five different ma'amorim, and there are going to be five different mandiyomrim who raise these questions, so we give us a little simen before, which is shin kuf zayin resh pei, Shak Zaraf, which are the osios of the people that are going to be quoted, which is Reb Sheshes and Reish Lakish and Reb Elazar and so on. And then we have the actual simon for the five questions that are raised, which is Miena V'yabma Shnia Arusa V'anusa. Okay. Anyway, here are the questions in order together with the Mandiyomri. So, Reb Sheshes was asked this question. How about a Mima Enet? So she went ahead and got married, and then, this was after the father had died, she was being supported by the estate. She went ahead and got married. She went to the chuppah, and she had a husband who was supporting her maybe for a year or two, and then she walked out on him because she was still a ketana, and a ketana can get mad, and she's allowed to just walk out and say, I don't like this guy. So now she's back in her father's rishus, right? I mean, how do we look at it? Do we look at it that it is a retroactive annulment of the marriage, miyun, and therefore the clause that covers her, which is ad shetilakhin lejuvrin, she never was married, and now she's still in her father's estate, and she should be supported. So, yesh la mizonot or ein la mizonot? Amar lo, Reb Sheshes said to them, look, you could see the answer from the Braita, Tanitua. Almana bebeit avia. So, let's say we have a woman who's now, after Erison is talking about, she's still in the father's house, meaning she's living in the estate. Or she's a grusha from Erison. Bebet Avia. Or for that matter, she's waiting for Yibum. Her husband died. She went ahead, was Mu'ureset. Her husband died, and now she's Chayevet Yibum. So she's a Shomeret Yibum, and she's on the estate. Yeshla Mizonot. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Oda Bebet Avia Yeshla Mizonot. But if she's already moved out of her father's house, Einla Mizonot. So what's Rabbi Yehuda saying? That's exactly what the Tanakhama said. The Tanakhama said, Bebet Avia. Amana Bebet Avia. Grusha Bebet Avia. Shomeret. I understand. So Rabbi Yehuda says, yeah, but only Bebet Avia. That's what I said, man. So what exactly is Rabbi Yehuda talking about? Hainu Tanakhama, right? Must be that the only difference between Rabbi Yehuda and the Tanakhama is how to view a Mima Enet. Because the Tanakhama holds, she's exactly where she was. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, it's only where she was still Bebet Avia. Not that she's currently Bebet Avia. And since she had been married, so even though now we're saying, okay, but we annulled the marriage, so now she's Bebet Avia. Yeah, okay, now she's back in Bebet Avia. But the truth is that she had left Bebet Avia. What else would Rabbi Yehuda coming to address? So that's your answer. It's Machlokas Tanakama. And Rabbi Yehuda? Boy Reish Lakish. Bat Yevama, interesting question. The daughter of a Yavama. So what happened is a woman gets married. Her husband dies. His brother marries her. They have a child. And then the Yavam dies. Now, the complication here is that when a Yavam takes a Yavama, he does not write her ksuva. Remember? It says, Ubavach tek tuvata al nirse, the first brother who died. So she maintains the original ksuva that she had. So now the question is, if she dies, rather if he dies, and now there's a child that needs support, and there's no new ksuva that was given from him, so does she get mizonot from her father's estate or not? And here's the question that I have. Kivan diomar mark tuvatal nechse ba'ala rishon. Since we learned before, remember back in Yavamas, that this was the Mishnah. She retains the ksuva that she originally had from her initial husband, the first brother. So therefore, I mean, if that's the case, then since she doesn't get anything from the Yavam directly, there's no Yavam's estate, so then the daughter also is not going to be given support. I mean, it's not the first husband's daughter. Oh, Dilma, kivan de'i'it la mirishon. De'let la mirishon. Remember that we also said that lamaisa, it's usur for the Yavama to remain married to this guy without a ksuva. So because of that, in the event that there was no property that was available to collect from, so then tekin la rabbana misheni. The rabbanan made a takana that she gets a ksuva from the Yavam. So then that same takana would certainly provide her, the daughter herself should also be given that takana, because we're concerned with setting up the family. So if that's the case, itla. So, I mean, that's the question. Are we talking about over here in the relationship of the daughter to the father through the ksuva? And if that's the case, we don't have a ksuva, or is there a direct concern from the chachamim to be koveya all of the things that a ksuva would provide in the event that there wasn't a ksuva? Over here, by definition, there is no ksuva. Why? Because even though the ksuva said, my daughter will be supported, this is not his daughter. So even if there is a ksuva, there's no ksuva about supporting the daughter. But you see, the problem is that that would mean that the stipulation of the Mishnah, namely that in the event that there was no money left from the first husband, that then we would provide her a ksuva from the second husband. What we're really saying is that we're always doing that in terms of the provisions for a child. That's a little iffy, because it's really an ansillary effect of the ksuva, that we have this clause in the ksuva. Would we do that? Does that mean that we will always provide for support for the child? That indeed, teku, that's a question. Item number three, this one coming from Rabbi Elazar. How about if you have the daughter of a shnia? So since she is a shnia, she is an isur erva midrabanan, even though we said before that when it comes to isur erva midiraisa, such as the amona to a kohen gadol, or the grusha, or the Mamzeret or the Natina to Yisroel, we said over there that there is a ksuva. But remember that the Rabbanan are more machmer on the Rabbanan Yisurim, and on the Shnia, they said she does not get a ksuva at all. Even the elements of a ksuva, which are for the purposes of getting rid of her. Obviously, the things in the ksuva that provide for her support, things like that. Of course she doesn't get that. We don't want them to remain married. Now, the question is, what about the status of a daughter that is born to an Isser Erva Minarabonan? So she's the daughter of a marriage that was an illicit marriage Minarabonan. Does she get Mizonot or not? Because, I mean, we did not give the mother a ksuva. I mean, so therefore we should say, Kivan de letla ktuva letla mizoni, o dilma ima da avda Isura kinasua rabbanan. Ihi, the law of the Isura, lo kenasua the Rabbanan. So, or do we say the only reason that we're not giving a ksuva to mommy is because mommy was a bad girl and she went ahead and she married illicitly. So therefore, we should penalize the poor daughter that she shouldn't get support? Or do we say, look, the support is an ancillary effect of the ksuva? Now, again, this touches on the same fundamental issue. Is our concern over here fundamentally the concern for the mother and the mother's concerns, which is what's going to be with my daughter, or is this part of the Bein Av Labito Uben Ish Liishto? And that essentially we're using the ksuva as a modality to provide support for the child, but that we're certainly going to keep in mind the primary result of the support for the child. So in canceling your ksuva, we certainly would not have canceled the part about the child. You see how this relates to the issue before as well, whether we would have made a takana in every case of a yavama, that in the event of the birth of a girl to the brother who does the yibum, would we automatically assign the chiyuv of support there too? Teiku. Number four, issue number four, to zero in more closely on this chiyuv. Boy Rava, how about the daughter of a arusa? So, okay, these guys didn't wait to get married. They had basically a baby before they got to the chuppah. What would be the din over there? Yesh la mizonot o ein la mizonot. So in this case, the husband died. Now, obviously, if there were any boys, I mean, there'd be no question. That is the din that they would inherit. But the question is, if there's also a girl, so now she is suing for support. Can she get support from the estate off of the boys or not? This is the question. I'll explain to you why I'm thinking about this, because given a itla ktuva, look, we said a mother has a ktuva as an arusa. So, therefore, it would include the need to support her daughter. Or do we say that, well, wait a minute, all of the clauses of the ktuva don't go into effect until you actually write the ktuva at the time of the nisuin? So, given a lo tekina rabban ktuva shat nisuin, and this girl was born in Erisin, so maybe Letla. They certainly did not mean for all of these issues, including the support from the estate, to go in. So if the guy wrote such a ksuva, fine, so obviously she's covered. But if he never ended up writing that ksuva, because they never got to the chuppah, so then maybe it doesn't go into effect. And the last question that we had is by Rav Papa. Bat anusa yesh la mizonot o ein la mizonot. So now the question is, if somebody had raped a woman and then he goes ahead and marries her because the Torah was b'chayiv of him to marry her, and she ends up with a daughter from that marriage, and then he dies leaving sons as well as the daughter. So now the question is, can she sue for support from the sons? Because remember, we've got a real question over here. Does an anusa get a ksuva? That's the question. Or do we say the money that he paid in the knas was her ksuva? And the whole idea of having a ksuva, so it shouldn't be easy to divorce her, he's not allowed to divorce her. So therefore, it would be irrelevant. That's our question. We had the machlokas before. So according to Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, there's nothing to discuss, because according to Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, an anusa is given a regular ksuva of 100, not of 200, because the value of the betula was already covered by the knas, but yesh la ktuva mana. So there's no question. But what I am asking is, according to the Rabbanan, Aliba the Rabbanan, who say, well, you don't get a ksuva because yotze kesef knasa, the money that was paid into the knas is essentially the ksuva. So what would be the din about the daughter? I mean, I understand that you don't have the ktuva. That's in terms of the mother. So if there's no ksuva, the idea over here is that there's no way to cover the daughter. Or do we say, look, the reason that you don't get a ksuva is because in this case, we don't need to guarantee that it'll be tough to divorce her, because you're not allowed to divorce her. Kidei shelote kalabei navlotzia, but this woman, since she was the victim of a rape, he's not allowed to divorce anyway. V'holomatzi mafek la. So if that would be the case, then we never put the ksuva there. But the other parts, maybe they're not just ancillaries to the ksuva. Maybe all of those additional issues that would be in the ksuva maybe we actually put them into effect over here as well, which would include, of course, the fact that we have to take care of the child. Teku. Okay, so this concludes the issues about the Benin Dichrin questions, the Benot Nukvan questions, and the issue of the Banot that will be supported until such time as they get married. And we'll move on tomorrow to issues about her support as long as she continues to live in the home, which was the closing clause of the Mishnah.